Welcome to another episode of 30 Minutes in the New Testament. 30 Minutes in the New Testament is a 1517 Podcast Network podcast. You can go to 1517.org/podcast. Check out all the other podcasts that are living over there. While you're over there, make sure you register for the Here We Still Stand Regional Conference. It's the first weekend in May, and it's going to be in Bentonville, Arkansas, like it always is. It sells out every year. If you want those tickets, you should go look into it, get some. You can go to the events page, scroll down, find that event, or you can click the link in the show notes. Eric and myself will both be there along with a whole bunch of other people. It's going to be a great time, a glorious time. It's going to be the time of your life. So go ahead, show up, and hang out with us for a couple days. Eric, we are in Revelation chapter 13 today. We are getting into some stuff that is like some of the more well-known parts of Revelation. So we've talked about a lot of destruction, a lot of turmoil, a lot of tribulation, women, dragons, seals, woes. Now yep. We get into, as someone might know if they were following along in their Bible, the heading here, the first beast.
Yes, we do. And so we are going to get into things today like the number of the beast or the mark of the beast, which obviously is a very famous, very hotly debated piece of the book of Revelation. And we're going to try and dissect that a little bit. We're also going to meet basically what is presented to us as the unholy trinity, that there's going to be this kind of counterfeit movement in that sort of presents itself as being on par with the true holy trinity. And so if you kind of, it doesn't actually say those words, but in the same way that the Bible doesn't use the word holy trinity to describe God, you can look at this passage and note that it's describing an unholy trinity. And I think what we're going to see throughout Revelation 13 is something that is counter to a phrase that we often hear in our daily life as Christians, which is, God has a plan for your life. You know, we hear that all the time. Usually it's said to, reassure us that we're not just random, meaningless pieces of cognizant space junk just biding our time until we eventually become worm food. I mean, it's meant to be a comfort to us that God has a plan for our life. Well, just as God has a plan for our life in general, that is true. We should also acknowledge that the devil has a plan for your life too. It is, in fact, the truth that the devil does, in fact, want to kill, steal, and destroy from the people of God, even if he knows he's already been defeated by, of course, the life, death, resurrection, and ascension of Jesus. That doesn't mean he isn't still planning and plotting how to destroy you and the world that God has created with the little time he has left.
Hey, misery loves company, and the devil would love that company to be you.
That's right. And so last week we met the dragon, and the dragon, of course, represents the devil, Satan. It's told to us, you know, at the end of the chapter that he is the same character that we meet in the very opening chapters of Genesis, the serpent. And yet in this chapter, what we're going to see is that through the agency of two characters known as the sea beast and the land beast, the dragon will create this unholy trinity to try and do as much damage and cause as much havoc as possible. So with that said, by way of introduction, let's dive in. Chapter 13, verse 1, John says, "And I saw a beast rising out of the sea with 10 horns and 7 heads, with 10 diadems on its horns and blasphemous names on its heads. And the beast that I saw was like a leopard. Its feet were like a bear's, and its mouth was like a lion's mouth. And to it the dragon gave his power and his throne and great authority." Now, what in the world did we just read?
Yeah, what's
goodness gracious.
What's the distinction between a leopard's mouth and a lion's mouth, right?
There's a lot going on here. There's a lot of imagery that I got to imagine when John is seeing this is like, I'm going to do my best to try and describe this, guys. I don't know. I don't know really what I'm seeing, but I'm going to try, you know. And so, you know, if you simply like read this on its face, it's obviously pretty mystifying to even picture, you know, such a beast or such a creature. But thankfully, this imagery isn't really new in the biblical literature at all. The imagery actually originates in Daniel's prophecy. If you go back to chapter 7 of Daniel, there, you're told of various empires that will come upon the people of God and overtake them, actually. And these empires are symbolized by these same sorts of predatory animals and with great horns, same type imagery. And without going too deep into the weeds here, Dan, because you and I aren't all about trying to dissect every possible meaning of every single prophetic word, but the big picture of Daniel's prophecy is he is giving the people of God a picture of the future, then future Roman Empire.
Right.
That's what all of this imagery is meant to convey. And since, of course, that is the empire the church of the day is living under, John is almost certainly referencing this empire in the minds of his readers.
Yeah.
And this isn't the first time he's done it throughout the book. He uses many different images, but it's almost always in some way or another related to the Roman Empire at the time. And part of the reason this imagery is used is because, you know, he actually wants his material to be read, and he doesn't want to give off clues that are so obvious that the Roman Empire will know exactly what he's seeing. One other note here, don't overlook the fact that the beast comes rising out of the sea, because, again, to the ancient audience, the sea is always associated with great evil and chaos. We've noted that before. And yet, as the churches in Asia Minor are the ones being addressed here, it would make sense that the beast is pictured coming out of the sea, because they were all situated very close to the sea. And so one commentator even suggests picturing great ships of Rome rising up over the horizon to conquer them and demand their loyalty and praise to the emperor, because we know that imperial cult worship was a real thing there. So John's only going to add to that understanding as we continue on in the reading.
Yeah. I mean, the sea thing is like, that's how you traveled, man. So like if you were going to be conquered or invaded by another people, certainly in this case, this is going to come from across the sea.
That's indeed the case. And of course, we know that Rome was equipped with better seafaring ways than anywhere else. It was one of the reasons they were able to be so powerful. And so John continues verse 3, one of its heads seemed to have a mortal wound, but its mortal wound was healed. And the whole earth marveled as they followed the beast, and they worshiped the dragon, for he had given his authority to the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like the beast, and who can fight against it? Now, again, you say at face value, what in the world are we supposed to take from this? But this is where it's, again, very helpful to have a bit of knowledge of what was going on at the time in the first century. Nearly everyone living in the Roman Empire of that day would have known what John was referencing here, because not long before the writing of Revelation, the great and terrible Emperor Nero killed himself by thrusting a dagger into his own neck. Well, suddenly it makes sense when John says that one of the heads seemed to have a mortal wound. It would have been assumed by most that when the emperor kills himself, that maybe the empire is in big, big trouble, that it might even be dying itself. But we know from history, the reality was the Roman Empire bounced back from that blow with pretty relative ease.
Yeah.
On top of this, we know from numerous historians of the time that large portions of the population actually believe that either Nero was still alive or that he had actually come back from the dead and was planning on attacking the Roman Empire with a great Parthian army at his side. This was actually a pretty common belief at the time, because people really feared the absolute insanity of Nero.
Yeah.
As Nero did lose his mind and did all sorts of crazy things.
Yeah. And what is true about the Roman Empire is that this kind of statement, like saying, substitute Rome for beast. And it's exactly the sort of thing that people did believe and did say. Like, who is like Rome? And who can fight against it? They believe this, certainly.
Yeah.
I mean, Rome believed this.
And certainly the early Christians very much felt that.
Yeah.
Very much felt that they were under constant threat by what the empire could do. And if this is indeed referring to Nero, it was commonly known what Nero had done to Christians. You know, lighting them on fire as entertainment for his party guests. You know, lighting them on fire slowly. You know, kind of putting pitch at the bottom of their feet and letting it just burn slowly. I mean, it's obviously horribly atrocious stuff, but it is true. And so you put all this together, and it's pretty clear that at least what John wants his readers to think of this sea beast is something equivalent to the Roman Empire. That's pretty obvious here. So the question is, what will this great and terrible empire beast do? Well, that's what John answers next in verse 5. He says, and the beast was given a mouth uttering haughty and blasphemous words, and it was allowed to exercise authority for 42 months. It opened its mouth to utter blasphemies against God, blaspheming his name and his dwelling, that is, those who dwell in heaven. Also, it was allowed to make war on the saints and to conquer them. And authority was given it over every tribe and people and language and nation, and all who dwell on earth will worship it. Everyone whose name has not been written before the foundation of the world in the book of life of the Lamb who was slain. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. If anyone is to be taken captive, to captivity he goes. If anyone is to be slain with the sword must he be slain. Here is a call for the endurance and faith of the saints. So John describes a conquering empire coming with blasphemous things to say about God. Now, put it all together here. The dragon from last chapter is a defeated foe already. But again, that doesn't mean he's done fighting. And how will he fight the people of God all throughout history, whether it be in the first century or whether it be in the very end, in the very last days? Well, typically the way the dragon works is he's going to use strong and mighty empires like Rome's to conquer and then persecute the people of God and demand that they renounce their faith. Now, in America, thanks be to God, we haven't really ever had such overt persecution. But of course, we know that today, throughout the rest of the world, this kind of thing happens. So if you think of a place like North Korea right now, that's happening. If you say a peep against the state in worship to Jesus Christ, you get gulagged really quick or tortured or killed.
Yeah.
This was par for the course. And when you think about it with the backdrop of the emperor worship that was going on when this was written, makes all the sense in the world that John says, yes, the people really working behind this dreaded Roman Empire, the force working behind it is in fact the devil.
Yeah, one of the things too is that, you know, we've talked about this, and you have to keep bringing it up because it's easy as you're going further in to think that you're going further in and not reading the same thing again, which is what you should be thinking. Is that like, am I reading the same thing from a different vantage point? Is this the similar thing to the thing I just read? If you go back two chapters, you might be like, 42 months, it sounds familiar. And if you go back to chapter 11, you know that 42 months is the amount of months, right, that you will, that the outer part of the temple is trampled on, right? So the holy city is trampled on for 42 months, which is the same amount of time as given right here. That the power, right, the authority is given to the beast for 42 months. Are these two different things? No, I think these are probably the same thing.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, it's just, and you see this kind of circular thing all the time in Revelation where John just uses different imagery to describe similar events. And so far we see that like the devil's plan is to use the forces of the world, the great empires of the world, the nations of the world to come up against the people of God in order to devour the people of God, in order to get the people of God to shrink back in fear. But then there's a second part of his plan that you see unfold in verse 11, and that is his plan to deceive people into believing that he is worth their devotion. And so it says this, then I saw another beast rising out of the earth. It had two horns like a lamb, and it spoke like a dragon. It exercises all the authority of the first beast in its presence and makes the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast, whose mortal wound was healed. It performs great signs, even making fire come down from heaven to earth in front of people. And by the signs that it is allowed to work in the presence of the beast, it deceives those who dwell on earth. telling them to make an image for the beast that was wounded by the sword and yet lived. So the second beast is basically a false prophet who seems to be doing things only someone supernaturally empowered can do.
Well, you kind of get the idea here that the first beast is political, mm-hmm. and that the second beast is theological.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you have like this. So this would be the religion, or this would be like a religious leader giving credence and propping up this political beast. That's what it is. So you have the political beast of Rome, and then you have this like, hey, religious seal of approval in the second beast.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, if you want to, again, go back to the first century, you had your theologians of the imperial cult supporting the imperial cult that are telling people that, yes, the only right thing to do is to declare that Caesar is Lord. That's really what's going on here. He is deceiving people by saying you must bow to Caesar. And of course, we know that the early Christians got in the biggest trouble because they refused to say those words.
Yeah.
Three little words. That's all they had to say. Even if they didn't believe it, even if they truly still believe that Jesus is Lord, they refused to just say those words, Caesar is Lord. And this got them in all sorts of problems. It got them in all sorts of trouble. But this was the way, this was the deception that the devil used back then. It's still the deception that the devil uses today. He's always trying to get us to run after idols. Always.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right.
And even if the idol, I mean, he's fine. Like, the devil is fine if the idol we believe in has all sorts of Christian veneer to it. Like, all sorts of Christian values espoused by it. I mean, there's any number of things that Rome espoused morally that I'm sure we could find today and go, yeah, I agree with that. There's all sorts of things that we wouldn't agree with too, that we could go into, but we won't. But the fact is, like, I mean, something can look good. Something can look even downright Christian-y.
Yeah.
And yet it could be something that is not the true God.
Look, I mean, the devil, of course, like, is he fine with some psychotic political leader wreaking all kinds of havoc and torment and suffering on people? Absolutely. Of course. Does he want to do all that and not have you worshiping the wrong God? No. So, of course, there's going to be a religious element to it. The ultimate win for the devil is not just promoting suffering. It's promoting false worship.
That's exactly right. Because he knows that's the thing that ultimately separates one from God.
Yep.
Is to go after another God. And so what happens when you as a Christian refuse to go after this state-sanctioned, religiously sanctioned idol? Well, inevitably you get marginalized and ostracized, which is also part of his plan.
Yep.
So we read in verse 15, and it was allowed to give breath to the image of the beast so that the image of the beast might even speak and might cause those who would not worship the image of the beast to be slain. Also, it causes all, both small and great, both rich and poor, both free and slaved, to be marked on the right hand or the forehead so that no one can buy or sell unless he has the mark. That is, the name of the beast or the number of its name. Now, incidentally, we are living in a time where we can read articles about companies like Amazon that are looking to make your hand into a credit card. Mm-hmm. I just saw a video the other day in which that was done, and somebody was kind of like, whoa, this is so cool. I could just swipe my hand, you know, and they know that it's me. And, you know, you might get a little freaked out by that, you know.
Let me tell you this.
It's not even theological that I wouldn't do it. I'm like, I don't want people tracking me. You know,
I don't want microchips in my body in general. But let me tell you this. I do not think that is the mark of the beast. I think it's way That is way too obvious, my friends. Let me tell you something.
That's right. No, that's exactly right.
Let me tell you something. When they developed the concept of Social Security and everyone got a number, Christians freaked out. Everyone's got a number. They're giving everyone a number. And guess what? If you don't have this number, like, you can't function in society. Everything's attached to this. You have to have this. You have to have this to get loans. You have to have this to get Social Security when you retire, like all this kind of stuff. And you have this identification number. That wasn't the mark of the beast either. Because the thing is, John's going to say right here, hey, this calls for wisdom. Let the one who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666, which is just the number of six is the number that represents man. Yes. So you have like this unholy trinity 666 thing going on. Okay. Listen. The idea here is you have, and feel free to disagree, Eric, but you have this political power that Satan is using, bolstered up by this religious power that Satan is using. And the whole goal here is what? Like, what is it that could possibly come about that could make, what could they do to make it to where, like, hey, you can't buy or you can't sell, all this stuff? Well, in this time, you were not going to be able to operate as a sort of autonomous member or a free member of society without giving allegiance to this power. And the idea here is what? Listen. The devil's goal is to have you place your trust, your faith in something other than Christ. And what the mark of the beast is not like an actual chip or anything. I don't think it's anything like that. This is a faith matter. And can persecution get to the place? And the answer is yes, it can, and has, and could again, and is in some places, to where you will be forced to worship something other than God in order to have the things that you need to sustain your life. That is what this is talking. This is like not just like something that will happen in the future. This has happened since the beginning of the church.
Yep. I completely agree with you. So I am not going to push back against what you're saying. It probably behooves us to do a little exploration into what in the world this number represents. You already alluded to it in that six is sort of the number of imperfection, and it's associated with being the number of mankind in the scriptures. Fair enough. But it's actually interesting. I mean, if you try to sort of correspond the numbers to various Hebrew or Greek letters, you do get the title that comes out of that. It can be understood that John is referencing Caesar Nero, or it could also just be referencing the beast. Either one is possible when you do this kind of ancient technique known as gematria. It was used in the Jewish and Christian circles at that time to try and understand numerology. Again, you and I are very hesitant to go down numerological paths. I think Revelation is one of the very few books where we're kind of invited to do that at times, just because the number six and number seven are used so often, or the number 12, they're used so often to symbolically suggest certain things to the audience. And so I think it's fair game here. Either way, though, I think what John is trying to do is, of course, encourage his readers to recognize that you are not to have allegiance to this man-made system, that this empire is not your savior. This empire, even though it might be able to squeeze you economically, and even though it might make life very difficult for you, you must remember at all times that this system, in the final analysis, is being led by a defeated foe, and it is just men that are doing it. It is just mankind that are doing this. You are under a better leader.
Right. Yeah. And this all has to do, again, I mean, this all has to do with worship and faith. And it's not as though you could be like a person of faith and make a mistake, not realize that the microchip in the hand is the mark of the beast. And even though you are a faithful worshiper of God, and all your faith in your for your salvation is placed in Christ, and you don't realize that, oh, this microchip is the mark, and then you get it, all of that suddenly goes away. Because
no,
you did,
and this
you
is
did
my
the
big
one
problem
thing.
With the way this is presented so often, Dan. It's like people can accidentally turn away from the faith.
Yes.
It's like, not... no, this is a conscious decision. Like, you're aware of what you're being asked to do. The stark contrast between saying Caesar is Lord and Jesus is Lord, yep, is what's going on here.
Yep.
And so you're going to have to, you know, to quote the great Bob Dylan, you're going to have to serve somebody.
Yep.
And yep, this is the stark contrast. Either you serve the empire of man, the domain of the dragon ultimately, or you're under the domain of God.
Yep.
And his son, which forgives you all of your sins gratis. But you can't have both.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, there's going to be allegiance to one or the other. And so please steer away, dear listener, from any idea that you can accidentally sort of receive the mark and be like, oh, no, I'm damned forever and I can't get out of it. No, that's not the way this works.
Yeah. Yeah. All I want to do is have all my trust in the work and person of Jesus Christ. But I've got this stupid microchip in my forehead.
Yeah.
That's not how it works.
That's right. Yeah. And that's, I think it's important to note that, you know, especially in our time where we do see these technological advances and we do see, you know, whether I remember when the vaccine initially came out for COVID, there were people that were really worried that that might be the mark of the beast. I actually made a video countering that claim at the time. No matter what you think about the vaccine today, that's irrelevant. The point is, you're not accidentally going to take a vaccine and, oh my gosh, suddenly realize that you're now a Satan worshiper.
Could be great, could be horrible, not the mark of the beast either way.
That's right. Yeah, that's the big idea here. So you know, as we sort of wrap up the chapter, as you face the struggles and temptations of this world in the times that the church is really tempted to kind of give up, John wants his audience to remember again through these visions he's been given by God that even the greatest of rulers are still simply just ordinary people.
Yeah, I think this is the place not your trust in princes. John says the same thing. Like that listen, there's a certain amount of suffering that a political leader combined with a religious affirmation in the hand of the devil can certainly inflict upon you. But because they can inflict it, they can also alleviate it. They can make it go away. Mm-hmm. And do not be tempted to place your faith or direct your worship in the midst of suffering to such a person.
Yes. And this really echoes what John says all throughout Revelation in one way or another. You know, just as Jesus declared to Peter that though Satan desired to sift him like wheat, the good news for Peter and for us is that Jesus had prayed for him to endure. And indeed, Jesus Christ is doing the same thing for us now.
Yeah.
Every day. He intercedes on our behalf every day. Why? Because he's promised to us that since he's begun a good work in us, he's going to bring it to completion on the day of Christ Jesus. And therefore, no matter what unholy trinity rises out of the sea or rises out of the land, we don't have to fear. We're going to be okay.
That's right. All right, man. Well, we can leave it there. That is that chapter. We will be back next week. We're going to talk about 144,000 and the lamb. We're going to talk about some harvesting. It's gonna be great. You want to stick around for it? We are, nearing the end of our time. There's a big announcement coming up. It's kind of big about what we're gonna be doing in the future. Don't finish Revelation and then just unsubscribe. We're continuing, and it's gonna be a lot of fun. Looking forward to it. We will reveal more about that in the coming weeks. But Eric, until then, I will see you next week.
All right, sounds good.